It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Jill on Money. You know, I love this second hour because I get to do interviews. And what I really love is to be able to talk to friends of mine who actually do fabulous things. So, Lee Gallagher, I don't even know your official title at Fortune.
It's Assistant Managing Editor.
That sounds kind of great. Hold on a minute. I'm going to write that down. Assistant Managing. I want you to be Managing Editor. Why shouldn't you? Why should you be the assistant?
I mean, it's a legacy title. It goes back to the long kind of tradition of magazine editors.
Who's the Managing Editor?
We don't have it. We did away with that title. The editor is Alan Murray.
Right. He's a good guy.
He's a great guy. The deputy editor is Cliff Leaf. And there are a few assistant managing editors.
You know what? I'm going to give you a raise. I want
love
you
it.
To be the
this
forget
is why
that.
I love you, Jill.
I'm going to just cross out assistant. Screw it. You're the managing editor in my eyes. Lee, do you know what I was thinking about?
What?
How long we've known each other.
I was thinking about that, too.
Do you remember when we first met?
I was trying to remember. Was it? At another, was it when we were on Fox together?
It may have been when we were both on Fox. I think it was.
That's what it was.
I'm wondering if that was in 2007 or 8. Was it a financial crisis thing or was it?
I think it was before that. I mean, it might have been.
It might have been
2004
like,
to 2007 era.
Oh,
when I was
wait
doing
a second.
That a lot.
You know what? That was on Neil Cavuto's show. That was the weekend show.
Yeah.
That is exactly correct. And then that's when I was still like a money chick.
Right.
Now I'm a media hoe. And and then we met again on the early show, the CBS early show, in the middle of the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And I looked at you and I was like, you're like, I know you. I know you. And we had that little moment. And we were trying to say to people, oh, you know, the world is sort of coming to an end, but hang on.
It's okay.
It's going to be okay.
We're
maybe
resilient.
We are. We need that these days, too.
We do.
And then all of a sudden, I was in the Time, Inc. green room doing some stuff for Money Magazine, and there you are at Fortune doing your fabulous work. We meet again, we chat, we catch up. What's going on? How are you? Who are you dating? All that back and forth. And then you said to me, I remember this, you said, I'm writing a book. And I said, why? Why are you writing a book? Are you a glutton? You write for the magazine, you do videos, you do radio and TV on other networks. Why are you writing a book? What? And so let me just say, the book is The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy by Lee Gallagher, our guest. So why write this book?
So why do it? That's a really good question. You know, I am a journalist. I'm a storyteller. I got into this business because I love finding things out and telling people about them. And there is no better way to do that than a book. I wrote another book a few years ago called The End of the Suburbs about a big seismic shift that was happening. And I love documenting these sort of big things that strike chords in the consumer zeitgeist. And, you know, this story I had been following for... I met Brian Chesky, the CEO, back in 2012. I had heard about the company, obviously, before then and sort of dismissed it. I said, oh, these tech companies always think they can take an old idea and reissue it onto the marketplace. And I just sort of rolled my eyes. But I saw it grow and grow and grow. And I just found it really captivating for a number of reasons. It is a huge story that it's a disruptive social, consumer, and business story. The path of these three founders is fascinating. And I just thought there hadn't been a single book dedicated to this company yet. And I just thought I want to do it. And so I decided to take it on top of all that other stuff.
Okay, so you ruined your life for how long?
This was very fast turnaround. It was about almost a year all told. I had written an in-depth profile of Brian Chesky the year before. So I had done a lot of reporting around that and around him. So, but it was fast.
Okay. Now I'm going to, I want to admit something to you. I feel like I should hold your hand and do this.
Uh-oh.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I've never used an Airbnb.
That's okay. That's
really?
Okay.
I feel incredibly old and farty for telling you that.
It's so funny that you say that though, because that's, you know, sort of recognition that you know that
I know.
Many people are using
Forgetting
it.
About, like, I know people who not just use it, but actually rent their homes, not rent, but have their homes on Airbnb, have made little side businesses using Airbnb income. That's their side gig. I really feel like such a late adopter that now I may be, it may be sort of my same thing around Walmart, which is I almost said like I've missed the entire Walmart boom and I'd never been to a Walmart. So then wouldn't it be fun just to say I've never been to a Walmart?
Just keep it.
Right.
Yeah, keep sort the of, never.
Yeah. Like that's,
where does
but this feels incredibly old school to say that I'm scared to go stay in someone's apartment that's not a really good friend of mine and that I'm kind of revolted by the idea of anyone coming into my space. So that's totally off the table. But I'm missing an entire wave. And so let's start. You know what? Let's start at the very beginning. Remember the Sound of Music.
Of course.
There's a couple guys from Rhode Island School of Design, which is very close to my heart since I went to Brown. Tell us about those guys.
So they were, it was Brian Chesky and Joe Gebbia, and they met at RISD. They became fast friends. They got involved in all sorts of hijinks there around creating the and marketing the hockey team and the basketball team. And
which is actually hysterical at RISD.
That's funny. Exactly. They later said, what's a bigger marketing challenge than trying to build enthusiasm around sports at the design school? So, but they did that, and they cooked up all kinds of other ideas. I mean, the first idea they actually worked on together in terms of design was they did an internship, as I say in the book, at Conair, the company that does hair design, hair dryers. And such. And they were in teams of two in this group, and everybody else came up with different kinds of hair dryers, and they came up with like a whole different product category, a whole different direction for the company. Products like a shirt made of soap that washed off, just completely out there.
That's awesome.
And they said the executives looked at them like dumbfounded. And so they could tell that their ideas were kind of big and bold even back then. And Joe Gebbia said to Brian Chesky at the time, we're going to start a company and they're going to write a book about it. And so, and Brian was always sort of resisting that.
I love that. We're talking to Lee Gallagher. She used to be called the assistant managing editor at Fortune, but I am now calling her the managing editor. I'm sure Alan will be happy about that. She's written a book called The Airbnb Story. And when we come back from the break, we're going to take these. So when was this? When did they graduate from RISD?
This was in 2004.
So we don't get to the actual formation of this company till 2007. So they'll knock around a little bit. We're talking about Airbnb. I have already come out and said I've not used it. But if you haven't used it and you're intrigued by this story of these young stalwarts who are basically blowing up industries across the globe, actually. I mean, that's what's fascinating to me about it, that it's not just a U.S. phenomenon. It's a global phenomenon. Keep listening, because Lee Gallagher is going to tell us that they're just ordinary guys, just like you and me. It's like the movie stars. They're just like you and me, except they're not. I mean, I know that. If you got a financial question, remember, we are talking to Lee right now, but you can always give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com, and you can tweet @JillOnMoney. When we return, more with Lee Gallagher. We'll be right back.
It's Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Have a question? Call or email anytime, 855-411-JILL, or askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger, and we are talking to Lee Gallagher. She is the author of the new book, The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy. You may have read Lee's byline in Fortune, where she is the managing editor. I mean, assistant managing editor, but she's, in our eyes, the managing editor. And she also wrote a previous book called The End of the Suburbs or The End of Suburbs?
The End of the Suburbs.
Okay. That's sad. I loved my suburban, you know, youth, but okay.
It's gone.
It's gone. Did you grow up in the suburbs or the city?
I did. I had a Norman Rockwell amazing childhood in the suburbs.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a town actually called Media, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia.
Hmm.
And I work in the media. And so does my brother.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. So if you're just joining us, go onto the website, Jill on Money, and listen to the first part of the interview. And now you're caught up. Okay. So the Airbnb story starts with these two guys who went to Rhode Island School of Design. They were designers themselves. They knock around after college a little bit. And then what is the formation? What's the kernel of the idea behind Airbnb?
The kernel of the idea was Joe Gebbia had moved to San Francisco and was constantly trying to get Brian to move up with him so that they could start a business together. And Brian Chesky was very resistant for a while. It was risky. You know, his parents had drilled into him that he needed health insurance.
I love that. That's so awesome.
I know. And he finally did it, and they moved up together, but they were sort of bouncing around these ideas as they were talking about what they were going to do, and there was this big design conference coming to town. By the way, this story has been told a lot, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to skip over it in the book, but I drilled into it. It is so interesting how this company got started. I mean, it was one of the most surprising things to me. So anyway, they needed to make their rent, and there was this design conference coming to town that really had maxed out the hotel supply. So they were talking on the phone, and Joe at one point sent Brian an email saying, hey, I have an idea. Let's call it Designer's Bed and Breakfast, and we'll, you know, give them breakfast, and we'll give them a place to stay. He had had some air mattresses in his apartment just by chance, and they did it. And what's interesting is that they thought that they were going to get sort of hippie backpacker types. They just thought that it would sort of be an extension of couchsurfing.com at the time, which was this sort of culty community sort of thing. And they ended up getting this diverse group of people, you know, a woman from Boston in her 30s, a father of five from Utah, a designer who was Indian and had just graduated from Arizona State University. And they all kind of bonded that weekend. But the funny thing is, it wasn't really, they thought this was still a kind of kooky idea that was going to maybe pay the rent while they thought of the really big idea.
Mm.
So they didn't think this was going to be as big as it was.
Okay. And that was 2007.
Fall of 2007.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what happens to get them to the next level, which is, oh my God, we have something here?
Well, it took a long time. And that was another thing that really surprised me as I was researching the book. So they kept trying these other ideas that weren't working. They spent a month thinking, we're going to build a site called roommates.com. And that's great because everybody needs a roommate. They thought that was a much bigger market potential. They researched it for 4 weeks, and then they went online and found that there was roommates.com already. So.
Well, we might have wanted to have started that research with a little Google search, but
exactly.
Okay.
But back in 2007, maybe people didn't do that as
mm-hmm.
much. So then they said, you know, and they went back for the holidays, and people said, what are you up to? And they both of them kept saying, you know, there is this weird thing we did. And they came back and they said, maybe this is the idea. Maybe we should try it. And then they pulled in their third co-founder, Nathan Blacharczyk, who was a former roommate of Gebbia's and a sort of genius coder who had made $1 million in high school by building and selling marketing software.
Oh, wait, marketing software. Mm-hmm. He was like a troll, right? Wasn't he?
You call it today, you would call it spam.
Spam. Yeah. He was like the spammy, like bad guy, but he made $1 million in high school.
He did. He paid for his college. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Okay, so they grab him, they bring him in.
Yeah, and he's also interesting because he's the rare technical guy who, before doing all this, he actually took his GMATs and wanted to go to business school. So he did have a lot of kind of business interest from the get-go as well. And he was very reluctant, though, to join them. He thought, this is a little, I don't know about this. And they pitched him and they got him on board and they decided to make a go of it. And what followed was really months and months and months of just this thing not taking off.
Mm.
They did a big launch for South by Southwest. They got two customers. One was Brian Chesky, who needed a place to stay there. And even that person that they got, they found him on Craigslist and convinced him to list on Airbnb instead. So it wasn't working.
Okay. So what made it work?
So a bunch of things made it work. I mean, this happened again. They launched at the DNC that year with fanfare. They got more buzz and more traction and more press. But then they came home after that. And basically, if there was a big event every week, they would be fine. But there wasn't. And
oh, that's interesting.
They were dying. They basically were about to part ways. And one of their early advisors, Michael Seibel, said, you guys are dying. You really have to do Y Combinator, which is an accelerator program out in Silicon Valley that was very prestigious. But the founders, Brian Chesky, said, you know, we don't do that. We already launched. We've been on TechCrunch. That's for, you know, that's for early stage. You know, that's for companies that haven't even been out of the gate yet. But they had no other choice.
And so what did they get out of doing that, being part of that incubator?
They got a lot. I mean, they got access to the universe of kind of advisors that Y Combinator has, one of whom came by and ended up being their first major investor, which is really what kind of sealed the deal for them. But they also got a lot of advice from Paul Graham. He's sort of famous for his tough love to entrepreneurs. And the first day, when he first heard of the idea during the pitch interview, he said, "What's people actually do this? What's wrong with them?" I mean, everyone, you're not alone, Jill. Everyone thought this was a backwards, crazy idea.
And yet they continued and they stuck to it. And what's interesting about that is I think that one of the things that really seemed to stand out to me in the telling of the story is that there's a lot of young, brash entrepreneurs who are just like headstrong and I'm doing it on my own. But they seem to actually take advice.
They did.
So that seemed to me, at least, the hurdle that helped them get through. And then, you know, if you're open to it, look what door opened. So if someone writes $500,000 check and you're out of the gate and you're going.
That's
right.
That's really true. And in fact, Paul Graham, who ran Y Combinator, he said that one of the things that differentiated those three from other founders was that they had what he called intellectual toughness. And what he meant by that was that they persevere even when people say no. It's really hard to listen to people say your idea is terrible and no one in their right mind is ever going to use it, and yet keep going. And they did that. And so that combined with the advice, very specific advice, like Graham told them to go to New York. He said, where are your users? You have some users? They said, yeah, they're mostly in New York. It was not many. But he said, what are you doing here? Go to New York. Go sit with them. Go be with them. And so that is what they came and they really kind of got those users. They really taught them how to be merchandisers. The photos weren't great. They weren't selling themselves well enough, but they got those listings and they got more people, and then the numbers started to turn up a little bit.
Because it's interesting to me that there are two very distinct sides of the business, right? There's the people who are listing their properties to come stay, and then there's the people who are using it, and there's a slightly different marketing angle to each side, right?
Absolutely.
And for the ones that are using it, they also seem to offer something different than this is just a bed. So what is that distinguishing, like, why am I staying in this person's apartment in Alphabet City when I could be staying at the Marriott Marquis?
Right. Well, it's a great question. There's so many reasons why this has struck a chord. Because even for people who think it's crazy and would never do it themselves, you can't look at something that has grown the way it has. 140 million guests have taken trips on it without saying, okay, why did it take off? And there's a couple reasons. I mean, in those very early days, the idea was only renting a space in someone's home while they were present. And later, now, of course, you can rent out someone's whole apartment, which is what most of the business is.
All right. We're talking to Lee Gallagher. And when we come back from the break, she's going to tell us, what is the differentiator of Airbnb? It wasn't the first business built around sharing an apartment. So we're going to find out, what is it about Airbnb that allowed it to distinguish itself among the early group of businesses that were doing similar things, and hotels, and vacation rental, right? So the VBRO, is that what it is?
Yeah, the whole universe.
Right.
Yeah, so, they were far from the first.
Oh, God, I'm so behind the times. It's Lee Gallagher here on the Jill on Money Show. Her book is The Airbnb Story. When we return, more with Lee. 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. You ain't got
nothing on me. You're back with Jill on Money, and we're talking to Lee Gallagher. She is the author of a new book, really cool, The Airbnb Story. I have the galleys. you know, which is
special.
Yeah, and folded down and marked up. And this is the story of Airbnb and how these three guys disrupted a huge global industry, have made billions of dollars and lots of controversy. And, you know, it is interesting to consider that they were not, this was not a a unique concept. It existed previously, but they come along and they say, what? They say, how are we going to distinguish ourselves from everyone else? So what is it that they do that makes them stand out?
Well, it's so funny. When they first, they didn't even consider themselves a vacation rental website in those very early days. In fact, their first investor from Sequoia came up to them and said, you guys, do you know that vacation rentals is a $40 billion business? And they looked at each other and said, vacation rental? Like, you mean like the house my parents rented for beach vacations? Like, Brian Chesky hadn't even connected those dots, as he said it, as he says in the book. And they... It was different because it was what they call home sharing, but it was renting out a room while you're still there. And couchsurfing.com existed, but it was slightly different. There were so many other sites. There was VRBO, HomeAway. You could do this on Craigslist. You know, vacation rentals are as old as, you know, we've all done it. And but I think the home sharing aspect of it, and then the other thing was that they sort of built this website. They're designers, so it was very easy to use and very, you could do payments all in one place, which at the time was revolutionary for that industry. And it was urban. I mean, a lot of home vacation rentals were in beach and mountain towns, and this was in cities. So that's what made it so competitive with hotels.
And it was cheap.
And it was cheap.
I mean, that's the other piece of this, which is, you know, of course, when people ask me, and I'm sure you have this, like people come in that, where should I stay in a hotel in New York? I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
We never know. We live here. We don't
know. Right? And they were, you know, coming off of the recession, it's now the recovery, but it's pretty rotten times for a lot of Americans, that you could actually get a place to stay in New York for $100 a night. That's pretty awesome.
That alone was disruptive.
Right?
And so, yes, I think that when studies have shown that that is the biggest reason people choose Airbnb. There are other reasons why it has sort of taken off in the zeitgeist. That's a big one. And don't forget, it was founded in the Great Recession, and many great businesses were founded in downtimes like that. But that
Lee,
was a huge pull.
You write, I too remember being skeptical, not of the logo, but the belonging concept upon first hearing about it. What is this belonging this hippy-dippy concept? What is belonging anywhere?
So this is what, in 2014, they really, you know, from the beginning, they really thought this service really brings people together. You know, you open your home to someone, they come in, you share things, you share meals. A lot of people don't like to do that, but that was what they really liked, and they really centralized their whole mission statement around that, that, and this idea is that anyone can belong anywhere. And, you know, when I first heard that, I thought, you know, these Silicon Valley companies, they get so high-minded. Like, it's really a cheap place to stay. But then as I kind of learned a little bit more about it, I mean, that really is something that a lot of people get out of it. And it's why it's sort of, I mean, I think, you know, Airbnb took off with millennials at the beginning. And that is very important to them, that kind of notion of connecting one-on-one with people outside the realm of the commodified hotel rooms and the hotel big company universe. And the notion of sort of early on, their slogan was travel like a human, and just sort of, you know, seeing unique spaces, connecting with people one-on-one, even if they're not there when you stay there, you're still messaging with them. And that's one thing I didn't get. I just thought, I don't ever want to see anyone when I use Airbnb, at the few times I had used it. But it's not just about sharing the space while they're there. It's about, you know, that kind of digital relationship that you create with someone.
And that you get to walk in someone else's shoes in a way that's a more authentic way to explore a town or a city than you would normally have, right? So, like, you know, yes, you could be in the middle of Times Square and stay at a hotel and see the lights and the. But as you say, you could find an Airbnb in the outskirts of New York, and maybe you want to be in Flushing, Queens, and see like the biggest population of Asians outside of Asia, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can stay in places that are really off limits if you stay at hotels, and that can be a place like Flushing, like you say. It can be a very charming, narrow street, tree-lined in Brooklyn or Georgetown, as I write about in the book. Places that, you know, they're really charming and wonderful, but it's very hard to stay there in a conventional hotel. And so you get to, they call it live like a local, and there is something to that. Other people's belongings in the house, you know, a lot of people have different opinions on that. Some people don't want to really feel like they're in someone else's house. They don't want, you know, a couple people said to me, I don't want someone else's photos. What is it? You know, but some people think that's kind of cool. So it's not for everybody.
You know, it's also, and we should get into some of the controversy as well, because obviously your chapter called, you know, The Bad and the Ugly, which I mean, this is the worst case scenario, which is something bad happens mm-hmm. and it gets reported. Someone, you know, has a violent incident mm-hmm. or even just like the minor bad thing that mm-hmm. can happen. Like you said, you know, you can be someplace maybe on business and, you know, the cable and the internet goes out. Mm-hmm. But how do you think they've dealt with controversy? We're coming up 2 minutes before the break, Mark is telling me. So you don't have to do that all in this okay. one thing. But just, so what are some, how have they dealt with that?
It's been an evolution, I think. I mean, they had their first really big controversy happen back in 2011 when a woman's home that she rented out was just completely ransacked. It ended up being drug users, and it was just beyond recognition, and it was horrible, and they really dealt with it in a poor way. They learned a lot from that experience, and that really sparked the setting up of this whole customer experience and crisis management arm. But, you know, these things happen. And Brian Chesky says in the book, our product is real life. And there is no way this stuff isn't going to happen.
Right.
Statistically, it's very low, but there's been some bad incidents.
And they have a trust and safety team of 250 people right now. And I'm sure it's, going to be added in Portland, Oregon, Dublin, and Singapore, which I think is really fascinating that obviously they'd never conceived of that from the get-go.
Right. But they need it. And,
yeah.
and it doesn't always work the way it's supposed to. I mean, I have an example in the story in the book about a woman who rented her home out. She thought it was a team of golfers having a golf party, and it was a hip-hop party for 400 people with tickets sold on Eventbrite. And it was just, you know, no one got hurt, nothing, even the property damage was minimal, but she felt really defrauded. She didn't hear from them for a week after she got in touch. So the phone and the response system is something that they need to work on, and they're aware of that.
My God. All right. And then I want to talk, when we come back from the break, let's talk about the whole regulatory regime.
Absolutely.
Because obviously in big cities like San Francisco or New York, the municipalities want a little hand in the cookie jar as well. You're listening to Jill on Money, and we're talking to Lee Gallagher. She has written a great book called The Airbnb Story. She also writes for Fortune. She is the assistant managing editor, but let's all write Alan Murray and say she should become the managing editor. 855-411-JILL, and you can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money, and we are talking to Lee Gallagher. I'm playing footsie with
we
you.
Are
sorry.
Playing footsie.
She wrote a book called The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy. Lee is also the assistant managing editor at Fortune, and she's written another book called The End of the Suburbs. I should probably have you come back for that one.
Sure.
Because that's I'm fascinated by like the housing market and what's the dynamics right now. One of the things that the founders of Airbnb cannot, deal with is these weird bad things that occur. But the more anticipated parts of the business were the regulations that existed in lots of cities. So for those of you who don't live in a big city, imagine that you're living in an apartment house and you are either in a co-op or, maybe a high-end rental, and you have a lovely little community, and you had to go through lots of hoops to buy your place or even to rent to get through a board and a whole approval. And then you find out that your next-door neighbor is using his or her apartment as an Airbnb. And all of a sudden, there's these weird people walking through the apartment. And you might not like that. Like they have a front, basically they are opening the front door of your building to anyone. And that's a scary thing. And so places like New York and San Francisco were somewhat concerned about that. And what's the answer to that?
It's so complicated. I mean, you said anticipated. I mean, this could have been something that they anticipated. They didn't. They were taken by surprise by all this. And in many markets, it is illegal to rent your apartment for less than 30 days when you're not there. The rules vary by city, so they're dealing with hundreds of different regulations. It is a thicket of rules, and it's much more complicated. Their legal issues are much more complicated than Uber's, I think. But this is the problem. This is a big problem for the company. And in places like New York, yeah, we live so close to each other. We live on top of each other here, and nobody wants that. So there's not only the legal issue. Technically, it's against the law, and we can talk about all the forces that are fighting against them. But it's the neighbor issue, and that's something that's very, very hard to get around for a lot of people. And the company has tried to put in place measures, you know, a neighbor alert line. You can complain if somebody gets three strikes, you know, they're taken off the platform, that sort of thing. But, you know, I talked to a lot of people who are not happy about this because you have tourists. They're on vacation. You got to get up for your presentation the next day. They come in at 1 a.m. and they're drinking and having fun. And there's almost no way around that.
Yeah. I mean, there's I'm just thinking about my own building, where no one has explicitly done it, but the managing company of sent a note out to all the buildings that they manage saying, this is not allowed.
Right.
Just so we're clear, you can rent out your apartment. You can sublet for a long-term lease 2 out of 3 years, and then you have to take 5 years. After that, you can't. So there's like very strict rules that are within a lot of these buildings that many people are shirking.
Definitely. And it's so funny because the fight is about getting the laws changed. But law aside, many buildings and co-op boards, they're never going to allow it. It also goes against zoning laws. So it's very complicated.
Except that they're booming in New York City, Airbnb.
They are booming. People do it. People either don't know about the rules or they just willfully ignore them.
So I want to talk a little bit. We just have a few minutes left in this segment. You like these guys, the founders, don't you?
They're likable guys. They are. I do like them.
Like, because there are many CEOs of these companies that, you know, you're like, oh, he's smart, he's great, she's wonderful, but, like, you don't like them. But it seemed to me, like, when you were writing about them, you like them, right?
You know, it's hard. They're good guys, and a bunch of people actually say that in the book about them. And, you know, Brian Chesky, for example, I would ask him about something, you know, well, they were launching this new product he was telling me about. I said, oh, isn't that like X company? You know, a lot of CEOs would say, well, not really. We're different. And he just looked at me and he said, yes.
Yeah. So that's,
you know,
there's a little bit
of honesty there that I like.
And self-awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, they're self-aware. It's taken them a long time to sort of get with the program and really learn how to scale and be leaders of a $30 billion company. But they have worked really hard at it, and they've kind of hacked leadership in a whole other way that I found really interesting.
So when you look at them, you started researching this a year and a half ago?
Yeah, but I would say I became familiar with the company in 2012-ish.
What do you think makes them successful on the management side? What about them? Well, let's talk about Brian, because he is the CEO for a second. So what is it about him how has he really honed his skills?
Well, he worked really hard at it. When he got into this business, he was the only one of the three of them that actually knew zero about business. He didn't know somebody said, oh, you've got to get these angels to invest in your company. He said, these people are crazy here. They believe in angels. Like, he really didn't know that. Didn't know what a slide deck was. Somebody said, you have to put a slide deck together. What's that? And he really, he's sort of, I describe in the book, I call him pathologically curious, because he just, and he's shameless about asking for advice. So he developed this whole process he calls going to the source. And that's basically finding sources for anything he needs to learn about and just relentlessly grilling them and just asking for help. And over time, that's helped him learn a lot.
I love that idea of asking for help. That's very consistent with the messaging on the show, which is, hello, if you got a financial issue, you got something going on in your life, just give us a holler, you know?
Exactly.
By the way, our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Lee, you have now done what is nearly impossible. You have done such a great job that we're going to keep you on for the fifth segment. I know you are. Lee Gallagher is the author of The Airbnb Story. And when we return, we're going to see what's next for Airbnb and what she sees. And when are they ever going public? I don't know if they are. All right. Jill on Money. We'll be right back. Amoeba. You're back with Jill on Money, and we're finishing up the show talking with Lee Gallagher, who wrote The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy. You should go get her book. We'll link to it in the show notes. Lee also writes for Fortune magazine. So, Lee, the company is worth, what, $30
billion? $30 billion right now, yeah.
Based on their, and they're considered one of these unicorns, these amazing stories that came out, right?
Yeah.
And so why have they not gone public? Don't the investors want their money out?
You know, what Brian Chesky will say and what he's told me that's in the book, they have a very long-term horizon. And when you raise venture funding, you really have the ability, when you're a company like Airbnb, to kind of handpick your investors. And he's told me that on the last funding round, he gave a 90-minute presentation to a lot of people, and they wanted to know that they would go public in a year or two, and he couldn't make that promise, and so they passed on the investment. So all the people that have invested in Airbnb are kind of on board with this 10-year plan. Not 10 years to go public, but just they want to be a $100 billion travel online travel company in 10 years.
And the in your mind, your best guess, you think 2018-ish?
I think it's not going to be this year. Maybe not even next year. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't it was not next year, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it was. They have plenty of money. They like to incubate these big projects they've been working on, like this. They just pushed into trips and stuff like that. So
they're going to become not just a disruptor of the hospitality industry, but the whole travel industry and the guide industry, and they're going to try to own it, right?
Yeah, they're trying to be everything. I mean, now they're getting into these experiences you can book. They are getting into services, flights, guides.
You know, you could, like, rent out your place and be like, you know what? I'll give you an experience. You can come with me to Fortune magazine. You can see a day in the life of Lee Gallagher, and it would be a fun thing, no?
A disruption tour. This is what disruption looks
This is what disruption looks like. Let me take you to an old media site.
That would be fun for some people, maybe.
Airbnb Story is Lee Gallagher's new book, and you should also be clear that Lee does a ton of other stuff. She does videos, she does radio, she does TV, sometimes for CBS This Morning, and just a delight to see you again. Fortune Magazine, so go to fortune.com, look at Lee, she's awesome, and thank you so much for listening, and Lee, thank you so much for joining
Jill,
us.
Thank you, it's been so fun.
We'll see you next week. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. See you next week.